This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, May the 25th, 2022. Welcome to Now with Dave Brown, coming to you on AMI Audio and AMI TV. I'm Dave Brown. Let's hit the horns and go. Coming up on the show today, we'll talk politics with Craig Oliver. We'll discuss what's going on at the Davos Economic Forum and so many political elements that come out of that conference. Canada is banning Huawei from the 5G network. Mike Agarbo of The App Show will chat about that. Community reporter Guy Carrière in Sudbury, Ontario, will share the details about this year's Northern Lights Festival, Boreal. Film reviewer Amy Amanti offers up her review of the action thriller, The Contractor. And our lifestyle columnist, Shiny Saravanamuthu, is taking a flight, traveling internationally. And I'm curious, what's in Shiny's suitcase? That and a lot more coming up on the show today. And backtracking to Craig Oliver, one of the issues that we're going to be discussing is our top story of the day. Americans are grappling with news of another school shooting. Report Jim Ryan is in Uvalde, Texas.
The tragic count stands at 21 dead, 19 children, and two ligues is in the fourth grade.
That could have been me. I could have got shot too. But then that's when I finally realized. That's when I started crying.
Investigators believe that 18-year-old Salvador Ramos shot and killed his grandmother before loading his guns into his truck and driving to the school.
U.S. President Joe Biden called for new gun restrictions and questioned why other developed countries don't have the volume of mass shootings.
They have mental health problems. They have domestic disputes in other countries. They have people who are lost. But these kinds of mass shootings never happen with the kind of frequency they happen in America. Why? Why are we willing to live with this carnage? Why do we keep letting this happen? Where in God's name is our backbone to have the courage to deal with it and stand up to the lobbies?
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also reflected on the shooting.
The students, the parents, the teachers, the entire community, had their lives changed forever by this unimaginable event. All of Canada grieves with our American friends in this terrible, terrible day.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris says action must be taken to address gun violence and mass shootings.
I think we all know and have said many times with each other, enough is enough. Enough is enough. As a nation, we have to have the courage to take action and understand the nexus between what makes for reasonable and sensible public policy to ensure something like this never happens again.
That's a thought not echoed by Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville, who thinks guns are not the problem.
These people that say this gun is a problem, I feel sorry for them. I really do. This is a people problem. It's not a gun problem.
So let me level with you. I make a choice every day when I'm preparing these news reports for you. Every day I have to decide whether or not to share the details of a mass shooting in America because there are multiple victim shootings every day. Last week, I chose not to share the details of the Buffalo supermarket shooting, the Milwaukee arena shooting, or the California church shooting. Because at a certain point, by sharing these stories, am I just engaging in some kind of televised version of doom scrolling? But just because I'm not sharing them doesn't mean that I don't ache, that I'm not feeling something. But what does my pain or vulnerability solve? Today, my heart aches for those 21 people in Texas, for those 19 children, just like it did for the preschoolers in Newtown, Connecticut, just like it did for the high school students in Parkland, Florida, just like it did for the worshipers at the mosque in Quebec City, just like it did for the people in Nova Scotia, just like it did for the high school kids at Columbine in Colorado, just like it did for the concert goers in Las Vegas. Did you know that after that shooting in Las Vegas, you can't leave a do not disturb sign on your door for more than 48 hours without security coming in? Do not disturb rules changed within days of the shooting, but nothing on guns, nothing. So don't take some cynicism that you might hear from me on this show today or in future conversations about shooting in the U.S. as a lack of empathy, sympathy, heartache, or pain. Take it as an understanding that people will always point to mental health or video games or bigotry or do not disturb policies or Marilyn Manson as the underlying issue of gun violence. But they just won't actually do anything about the guns. All right. Started the show on something of a heavy note. Let's go back to some of the fun stuff we like to do, like our daily polls. At AMI Audio is where you find us on Twitter. Accessible Media Inc. is where you find us on Facebook. On Tuesday, we asked you, what should power companies do to better protect infrastructure from storms? And what do you do to prepare yourself for such storms? Karen writes in, keep trees trimmed. When we first moved in, Hydro asked us if they could take down a tree that was older and a threat to power lines. We said yes, and they told us a lot of homeowners won't let them. It was a beautiful birch tree and I hated to see it go, but I like power more. Studio Brock tweets in, we've clearly got to do some re-engineering, smart deployment of underground cables, different heights and locations for above ground poles, etc. Grid decentralization may help too. Rooftop solar and SMRs put around the province won't save power lines, but will keep us connected. Great thought by Brock. Brock joining us there at AMI Audio. You can be just like Brock and answer today's daily poll at AMI Audio on Twitter, Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook. And we'll talk about this with Shiny Saravanamuthu a little bit later in the show. When you travel by airplane, do you check a bag or do you carry on? So I've got options for you here. Check bag, carry on, depends on the trip or both. Let's start with Sam Robinson on this one. Sam, when you're getting one of those big silver birds, what's your plan with the bags?
Unfortunately, I seem to have to be one of those people who's always checking at least one bag, because if it's not traveling for work, in which case I've probably got some expensive piece of gear with me,
mm-hmm.
which means that that's my bag that's coming on with carry-on. It's the fact that I'm traveling now with children, and there's more things involved with
children.
Kids.
Take stuff.
Yeah, and you don't tend to like just be like, oh, we'll go for a weekend. I wouldn't put myself through two airline security check-ins for just a weekend or anything like that. So you're going to have to carry enough stuff. It's going to be a check bag for me, which means that they're going to get me with that dang check bag fee,
mm-hmm.
which,
mm-hmm.
you know, they brought on for periods of high gas prices. Then they went away and then they came back. Well, they're still here for the new high gas
They'll
prices.
They'll be here forever, checked bag
yeah,
fees.
They love that.
Even though it might actually be faster if they just started having people check in bags for free and paying for carry-on. Like the actual boarding and deplaning of planes might
now,
actually be faster.
Now, that's the kind of Dave Brown Consulting idea that I'm here for.
That one's stolen from my dad, the senior vice president of Dave Brown Consulting.
The founder,
if you will.
Yeah, the founder and CEO. Yeah, just mostly because, like, I think it's... We should expect that the holds of planes are going to be filled up. Whether or not it's with people's baggage, it should probably be with mail like carriers or something like that. They should be, you know, utilizing all the space possible in the baggage. But in the cabin is where it makes the most inconvenience for everybody else, and that we should put a premium on that.
Yeah, I can't reveal too much here because it hasn't been publicly announced. But I'm heading to Winnipeg for work in June, and I am hoping to get away with just doing a carry-on bag. But Sam, much like yourself, I'm a taller gentleman, which means that my clothes tend to be a little bit bigger too. And if there needs to be some wardrobe choices made while I'm out there, then I've got to pack extra stuff, extra items that I need to bring. So my preference oftentimes is to do carry-on. But as a taller gentleman who sometimes appreciates the legroom underneath my seat, sometimes I don't mind throwing that checked bag underneath and just sucking up the fee. Yeah. Sam, I got to bring things in over to Mike Ross at this point. Mike, when it's time to hop on the big silver bird, what's your baggage strategy?
Depends on distance, length of travel, but usually there is a checked bag. The one thing I will say about carry-on, if you're going that route, there are great websites out there with packing tips and advice on how to strategically pack items in that carry-on
bag. The miracle of the roll, the rolling
technique
instead of the folding technique.
That's right, right? Like your shoes, they're hollow. You can put things in those shoes and pack them away and save a bunch of space in that bag. So I, like Sam, I'm usually checking at least one bag. And if we can get away with it, then we have one large suitcase for my wife and I. But I got to tell you, I'm kind of jealous of those folks who just pack it all into one quick little bag and take off. Though I find that more and more over the last few years, I see people try to jam those slightly large little suitcases.
Bane of my
into
existence.
The overhead. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a fan of those either. Right. So I think sometimes it's just a matter of convenience and not wanting to lug something around on the plane with me. But sometimes it's just, you know, you're gone for a week and a half, 2 weeks. One little bag ain't going to do it.
Not going to cut it. You know, people are selfish too, because they're supposed to put those bigger items underneath the seat in front of them, but they go, oh, I don't have enough leg room. Well, check your bag then. Check your bag or fly first class. That is a solution. Just fly first class. You know what? Listen to Mike's big business story and buy one of those Bombardier jets. 78 mil. Pocket
skip
change.
Skip the baggage fee and instead buy the inflated first class seat. Yeah. Come on.
The great irony being when you buy those upgraded seats, whether it be a first class or business class, they give you a complimentary checked bag. So, you know, there's always a cycle running around here. Hey, Mike, we got to scoot, but thank you for this. We'll talk to you in a little bit for the big business story of the day. At AMI Audio on Twitter, Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook. We'll explore this issue a little bit further with Shiny Saravanamuthu later in the show, our lifestyle columnist. But let's explore what's going on in the world of weather with Grace Schofield.
Thanks so much, Dave. Here is your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada. We're going to start in St. John's, Newfoundland, where it's a mix of sun and cloud today that'll clear up this afternoon and a high of 7. In Halifax, there's a mix of sun and cloud, and it'll become a little sunnier this morning with a high of 20. In Montreal, Quebec, it's mainly sunny and a high of 23. In Ottawa, it's sunny today with a high of 23. In Toronto, Ontario, there's a mix of sun and cloud, becoming more cloudy than sunny this afternoon and a high of 20. In Thunder Bay, it's cloudy this morning with rain beginning late this afternoon and a high of 14. In Winnipeg, Manitoba, it's sunny early this morning, then a mix of sun and cloud moving into the afternoon with some showers and a high of 23. In Saskatoon, it's sunny early this morning, then a mix of sun and cloud, with a risk of a thunderstorm late this afternoon and a high of 24. In Calgary, the sky is clearing up a little bit and there's a high of 19. In Edmonton, a mix of sun and cloud with a risk of a thunderstorm this afternoon and a high of 18. In Yellowknife, a mix of sun and cloud that'll clear up around noon with a high of 14. In Vancouver, there's a mix of sun and cloud today with a high of 18. And in Victoria, BC, there's a mix of sun and cloud with a high of 17. And that was your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada.
So Grace, carry on, checked bag. What's your strategy?
I kind of think that when people see me on an airplane, they're like, oh, I'm really sitting beside this one, because I have like a checked bag. I bring a carry-on, but then when they get you with the personal item, I've got like a purse or a backpack going on too. I don't pack lightly, so.
Yeah, I've been accused of not packing lightly either. I sweat. I never know how many clothes I need to bring on a trip.
Who's to say, right? You have to be prepared.
Always need to be prepared. Hey, Grace, thank you for this. We'll talk to you next hour.
Thanks so much.
That's Grace Schofield, our summer intern. You're going to hear lots from Grace over the course of the next couple of weeks and months. Coming up after the break, Amy Amanti will be here with a film review of the Netflix film, The Contractor. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's have a Wednesday edition of AMI at the Movies. Amy Amanti is here to offer up some thoughts on The Contractor, which I errantly said was on Netflix before the break. Turns out it's on that sneaky Amazon Prime Video. Of course, you can hear lots more from Amy when you download her podcast, Accessing Art with Amy. Hey, good morning, Amy.
Hey, good morning. Happy Wednesday. I just about said happy Monday.
Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday. Time is a flat circle. Amy, let's get a little bit of a synopsis here because I don't think this film is particularly famous. What is The Contractor about? Is it about home repairs?
I was just going to say, we are not looking at home repairs here. No painting, no ripping down drywall, no cleaning up of mold.
We're not flipping a house. We're not engaging in some house flipping.
You know, maybe if it was about house flipping, it might have been a tad more interesting, okay. But we'll just leave it at that. So we're going to be following James Harper, who is our main character in this, I suppose you can call him. He's a decorated serviceman. He's been involuntary discharged from the United States Army Special Forces. And this is because, and it's not a spoiler, but it's because he's been using some illegal steroids to treat an otherwise, what he refers to as a debilitating knee injury. And so, you know, he's a bit of a wounded warrior, and he's a serviceman, and he just wants to do his service for his country. So they let him go. And of course, when they let him go, they cut all of his benefits. And he's got a wife and a child to take care of. So now he's facing financial hardship. And he turns to a private military company under the command of a fellow veteran, Rusty Jennings, to get involved in some .. stuff.
Okay. So we're talking about a real kind of action setup here, paramilitary kind of mercenary kind of stuff here. So who is our leading action star, and who do they share the screen with, and how'd they do?
All right. Well, we got Chris Pine in this one, and many folks will know Chris Pine from the many shows that he's been on. So he's James. His best friend, Mike, is played by Ben Foster, and Mike is somebody who James reaches out to because Mike is also a retired or discharged veteran who is a private contractor. And then we've got Kiefer Sutherland, good old Canadian boy.
Mm-hmm.
As Rusty, actually, here's just a tad tidbit. When I worked in the film industry in my early 20s, I did a movie, worked on a movie that Kiefer Sutherland was in. So I had the opportunity to meet him.
Brush with fame.
I know. It's a very interesting time.
It's like me and Jay Baruchel, but I can't tell that story on air.
Yeah, I know. I got a couple of those stories, too, that are for behind closed doors with a beer in your hand, right?
Yeah.
So I would say that all of these performers are you know, they're great performers. And Chris Pine actually is, I think, at the top of his game in this particular film. He is rough and buff and very, I don't know, there are some actors that when they do military movements, you don't really buy it because it looks forced, it looks fake. But I totally bought that Chris Pine grew up in the military and had gone through all the training. So he was, I thought his performance and even just his physical performance was really quite good in this particular movie.
Amy, a lot of modern action films like to crank up the violence. What'd you think of the violence in this one? Was it gratuitous? Was it on point? Was it in some cases, like I like to say, not enough?
Yeah. You know, Dave, this is a real, you know, when I wrote these questions, we had not experienced what happened yesterday in Texas, as you pointed out this morning. And so, again, we have a lot of folks that talk about video games and movies with gratuitous violence being the air quotes cause of these kinds of mass shootings, which is not something that I agree with. But I would say in this particular film, I was expecting it to be a lot more violent just based on the title, The Contractor, you know, a contract killer, right? And this idea of being sort of ex-military in this military relationship. But I actually found the violence part to be well balanced out. Not too much, not too little, enough to keep the story going, but not in a gratuitous way where you thought, well, this is so unnecessary. Why am I watching all of this blood and gore?
Does that mean there was a lack of action?
No, it doesn't mean that there's a lack of action. I think what it means is that the action was paced out in a very interesting way. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of flaws for me with this movie in particular, but some of the highlights are the way that they kind of laid out the way that the violence was portrayed in this particular piece. So it's poignant. It continues the plot line forward. It builds the relationships between the characters, but it isn't the kind of film where you're just shooting for the sake of shooting.
There was an action film that I watched during the pandemic called Extraction with one of the Hemsworth brothers. And that was a speedy, fast-moving action flick that was visually stunning. And I kept thinking to myself as I was watching it, oof, this must be a real challenge for the audio describers. So how did the audio description hold up in this action flick?
Well, there's a couple of things that I liked. And again, this action flick is well-paced. So there aren't these moments, I didn't find these moments where there is so much happening that you're trying to keep up from an audio description perspective. What I like is, you know, if you're watching a movie with audio description that doesn't require, so I guess I'll rephrase this. You know, oftentimes in audio description, we get the tall man, this, the bespectacled man, that, the, you know, the woman in the red dress, right? It's very generic until the character name is revealed. Mm. And that's a lot for me to hold in my brain. So what they've done with this one is for most of the main characters, they identify them by name. Now you can't do that if you're in a movie where identifying a character by name will spoil it, like Kaiser Soze in The Usual Suspects.
Right.
If you learn right off the top who Kaiser Soze is, it'll totally spoil it for you. So I thought that was really nice in this because we're trying to keep track of many characters. What I didn't like was there was too much movement for me, too much shifting, like every little shift, twists his arms, you know, joints his head, moves his body. And it's like, there was no context for that. So I don't know why he was doing these movements. They were just described for the sake of describing them. And that was overkill. Mm. And then what kind of irked me is when describers don't know proper names for things. So they referred to the gun as having a muffler on it.
As opposed to a silencer.
As opposed to a silencer. And I was like, I don't know, three or four times they're like, the gun with the muffler. And I thought, what's a muffler? That's not a car.
Is he shooting from a car? Is he shooting from a tailpipe?
So that kind of irked me just a little bit, but otherwise very necessary, of course, to be able to follow the plot line, because there are these moments, of course, where you're in silence and action is happening.
Amy, you said there were some flaws with this that you found notable. So what's your overall impression and score of the movie?
Yeah, I think the big flaws for me, Dave, are going to be that I had a hard time following parts of the plot, in particular, what the mission was that the contractor was going on, why it went wrong. And I don't know if it just wasn't explained well, or if I missed it, or if they were speaking a language that I didn't understand. So, you know, I was in it until all of a sudden I was like, why is this going wrong? And why, what's happening here? So I'm giving this a 6.5 because I would have to watch this 2 or 3 more times, maybe to catch those little moments. And I don't want to watch
it's not worth it. It's not worth a rewatch.
Exactly. It's got some nice, you know, moments for the type of film that it is. But overall, if you got to watch it that many times, you got to really be invested.
Yeah. Let's be clear. If you're going to rewatch something 2 or 3 times, you have to really be engaged by that content. The question can't be, oh, this plot was hard to follow. The question is, what did I miss, right? What did I miss in the plot, or what can I gain from rewatching this? Not simply, oh, I now understand.
Yeah. And I, you know, if I'm going to rewatch something, it's because I want to experience it from a different angle, because I missed something, but thought, ooh, there's a lot to unpack in this. I want to experience this again, but now I'm going to focus on something different.
Yeah, no spoilers here, but the first time I walked out of Denis Villeneuve's Arrival, I was like, that was kind of a garbage twist. And then I rewatched it and I was like, oh, I wasn't smart enough to understand the movie the first time I watched it. And that works for me. That's the kind of valuable rewatch.
Did you watch his film called Prisoners?
Yes, with Jake Gyllenhaal.
That was, for me, an interesting film because there were so many things happening in that I thought, okay, if I watch this again, maybe I'll get a different perspective. So I did watch it a couple of times. It's not the most fantastic film that I've ever seen. That being said, there were so many different perspectives that I thought, okay, now I'm going to pay attention to this perspective a little bit more than that I did before. So that's how I want to engage.
I will tolerate that somewhat moderate Denis Villeneuve slander, Amy, but you're on thin ice moving forward. Hey, Amy, have a great day.
You too, Dave.
That's Amy Amanti, our film reviewer in BC. Of course, you can always find her podcast, Access and Art with Amy, on your favorite podcasting platform. And you can find the action thriller, The Contractor, on Amazon Prime Video. So once you get your toilet paper sent to you real quick, you can watch a movie too. Coming up next, lifestyle columnist Shani Saravanamuthu will give some packing tips for traveling in a segment that we like to call What's in Shani's Suitcase? But first, here is Canadian press reporter Karen Rebo with your morning business minutes.
Canada's main stock index rose yesterday after investors returned from a long weekend and sent the commodity and financial sectors higher ahead of the release of second quarter earnings from Canadian banks coming this week. Toronto's TSX index gained 88 points to 20,286. New York's Dow Jones average rose 48 points and the Nasdaq dropped 270 points. In Tokyo this morning, the Nikkei index fell 70 points and our dollar is trading overseas this morning a little lower at 77.90 cents U.S. Commodities firm Glencore says it has reached deals with authorities in the U.S., Britain, and Brazil to resolve corruption allegations in return for penalties totaling up to $1.5 billion U.S. The Anglo-Swiss company says it will pay $700 million to resolve a U.S. bribery probe and $486 million in connection with allegations of market manipulation. U.S. officials say the scope of the criminal bribery scheme is staggering. From the Canadian Press Business Desk, I'm Karen Rebo.
Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. As we've reported in a couple of news segments, the lines at airports, they are long. The lines for passports, oh, they're long too, which is something of a pain in the butt for travelers. But it does mean that people are back to traveling, including our lifestyle columnist, Shiny Saravanamuthu. You might recall that a few months ago, we played a game called What's in Shiny's Purse. Well, today we're going to play the game of What's in Shiny's Suitcase. Hey, good morning, Shiny.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Always fun talking to you. Shiny, let's start with a reminder of where you're heading and why you're heading over there.
So I am heading to Iceland on June 6th, and I'm heading there because I'm taking part in the Retina International World Congress, and I'll I'm organizing the youth program. So I'm representing Canada, and I'll be representing the youth program of the Retina International Foundation. So I'm going there for about a week, and I haven't left the country like most of you guys since before COVID. So this is exciting and weird and stressful all at the same time.
Yeah, I haven't crossed an international border since 2019. So it's been a minute for me as well. Shiny, are you nervous at all with some of these airport lineups and some of these delay horror stories?
Yeah, so my flight is actually from Montreal to Toronto and then Toronto to Iceland. So I made
sure. Oh, the dreaded transfer.
Yeah, so I made sure I took the path that gave me more time at Pearson, because Pearson, no offense guys, is a nightmare. So
the worst, airport in the existence of mankind.
Yeah. So I made sure like I get into Toronto at 7, even though my flight's at 11:30 PM. So I made sure to give myself enough time because I've heard that the lineups are horrible. So yeah, even coming back, I made sure I have enough time to do customs and everything from Toronto to get into Montreal.
Shiny, let's turn our attention to your suitcase, the whole point of this segment. Would you say that you pack light or you're someone who packs more than you need for traveling abroad? I'm guilty myself of being an overpacker, but as a dude, I do have some privileges in terms of like shoe and wardrobe variety, and I also don't have to worry much about like beauty products or cosmetics. So where do you land in the overpacking versus packing light debate?
Okay, maybe I'm a bit of an overpacker because it depends on where I'm going. So this time, Iceland has really got me confused because their temperature and their like climate is very all over the place depending on where you're going. So in the main city center, it can be like 12 degrees and super nice. The sun is a very screeching hot that it can burn you, but like there's no humidity there. So there can be a lot of wind and it can be very cold and dry. But then if I go see the glaciers, it is going to be cold. I need to pack boots. So it's like, I'm very confused on how to do this properly. Also, I don't know if you guys are aware, you have to now check in luggage where you have to pay even if it's an international flight. So one-way suitcase to Iceland is $70.
Oof.
So me and my sister are wondering if we should just get one big suitcase and put all our stuff in there and save ourselves $140 in total. So we're like trying to figure that out. So it's a little confusing, but I normally try to be cautious of how I pack so I don't have to bring too much stuff. Like I'll usually bring dresses, which are very small and like very thin, or I'll just bring a bunch of tops and a few pants and like kind of mix match, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little confused on how to pack, to be honest.
But it sounds like due to climate, this is definitely going to be a situation where there's going to be a checked bag, whether it's two checked bags between you and your sister or just one big old one.
Yeah, 100% there's going to be a checked bag. We both need to pack our puffer jackets, which are, they're easily like able to just like scrunch into a small little ball and put in our suitcase. We're just kind of confused on like the boots situation.
Yeah, the shoe thing is a big thing. I got big feet over here, so when I want to pack shoes, that's going to take up a whole bunch of room in the bag. Shiny, when you and I talked about our day-to-day bags, in your case, your purse, in my case, either my shoulder bag or my school bag, we talked about how we keep them pretty well organized. When you're packing to go abroad, do you keep an organized suitcase?
So I do keep an organized suitcase, but I also do pack a backpack with me because I need something to be able to bring with me when I'm sightseeing or going about. I do have a little small black backpack that I keep with me, and it has several compartments in it. So I'm able to know, like, okay, in this compartment, I have my hand sanitizer, my afterbite, and, like, you know, and I also have all my little pills in case you get a headache or, you know, something like that. So I have my little compartments within my backpack, and then to have also somewhere to keep our water bottles or snacks. So I always make sure to have a backpack with me no matter where I'm traveling, just because you want to be able to put all your little things that you want to carry with you at all times.
I hope you don't find this question crass, but you are someone who's going through the experience of a vision loss. Has that changed how you pack?
100%, because I always have to go, like, I pack a mini flashlight with me because sometimes the one on the cell phone isn't enough, but I don't think I'll need it as much in Iceland because there is going to be like 22 hours of sunlight or 20 hours of sunlight when I'm there. So there's only 2 hours of nighttime when I'm there, which is great for someone who has RP. So
not so great for someone like me who has albinism. Yeah, it's kind of the opposite.
So I'm looking forward to that. But yes, having vision loss has changed the way I pack because I do have to pack more things. I don't wear heels as much anymore because not as easy for me to walk because my vision's not that great. And if I do fall, and wearing heels is not the best situation. So there's little things. I have my magnifier now, which I'll be using. So there's little things that do help me in that sense, but definitely the flashlight, my sunglasses, my regular glasses, my cell phone, which I used to zoom in on things, but now I have my magnifier. So all those little things, that's why the backpack is so important, because I have so many things to carry with me now that a little side purse doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah, I know that with my suitcase, I have a very particular way that I put things into particular pockets now. I'll even sort of zone out spots in the bag where that's where this particular item goes. So as you say, if it's really dark in a room or the lighting or the vision situation is not ideal, that I kind of know where to feel around to find things on the fly. So it's something that I've been super cognizant over the years, and even things like keeping all my certain kinds of cosmetics in one front pocket and a different kind of cosmetic in a different front pocket. I definitely am someone who likes to compartmentalize a little bit with my bag when I'm moving around. Shiny, not to deviate too far from the path here, but have you had any considerations about orientation and mobility and maybe a couple hacks or tricks that you might try and employ when you're going somewhere new? I know, for example, one of our friends from the Vancouver Bureau will always put a rubber band on his hotel room door so that certainly if he's not being guided to his room, he can always try to feel door handles. But do you have something in mind in regards to some of those kind of hacks and tricks?
So what I do is when I book a hotel, sometimes I just end up calling the hotel to ask me if they can send me the layout of the room. They tend to have like the layout drawn just because I know when to walk in, where the light switches are going to be, where the bed is, how everything's going to be. Also, hotels are very notorious for not having the best lighting. So that's another situation, right? So just to be, because sometimes you walk in and it's not well lit. And so you can't see. So knowing the layout, and sometimes you can even find the layout of the rooms on the hotel website. So if they don't have it, I just call and I ask just to figure that out. And usually a lot of these hotels are very, very accessible and very open to helping you if you let them know. So I usually just call in advance and just ask for a more accessible room or just to, if I'm alone, have someone help me if I can't figure it out. But this time I will be with my sister, so that is a plus. But I did like the rubber band trick is actually pretty neat, but usually I count the doors to the other door, and then
that's what That's one of my moves. I'll do a lot of door counting on my way. Although sometimes after enough adult beverages, the door counting strategy not the best one. Shiny. I also imagine due to the nature of the conference, I'm sure the hotels are going to be kind of on high alerts to make sure that they're a little more accommodating than even like the standard level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There'll be a lot less there.
Well, Shiny, listen, I know you're leaving in a couple days. Safe travels. I hope everything goes super smoothly. I hope the conference is amazing, and I can't wait to hear it next time we have you on for a community report to hear how it went.
Yes, perfect. Well, have a great, spring?
Yeah, it's called spring.
Yeah, spring, and I'll catch up with you guys in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, right on. That's Shiny Saravanamuthu, lifestyle columnist, also a community reporter for us in Montreal. Let's bring in Mike Ross for the big business story of the day. So, Mike, yesterday in the news quiz, we had a question about certain imports and exports that are changing due to the context of food security. And you've got a follow-up story here about the way that India is going to be changing some food exports.
So India was the country that we were talking about in the news quiz yesterday, Dave, where they have reduced the amount of wheat that they are exporting because of fears of shortages around the world, therefore taking care of their domestic market first. Mm-hmm. They're doing the same thing now with sugar. They've restricted their sugar exports to 10 million tons in this current season, again, to help maintain domestic availability and to keep prices stable. Now, this is, as I mentioned, the decision to follow a similar measure with wheat. India is the second largest producer and biggest consumer of sugar and the second largest exporter of sugar in the world. And these export curbs are the first that they have put in place in 6 years. So, you know, we've been talking about supply chain issues and issues getting certain products on grocery store shelves. Here's an example of it in real time and in very plain English, right? I mean, here is a country that is the second largest exporter of a product, in this case, sugar, and saying that, sorry, but we're cutting, it's kind of like that India first, mentality with their wheat and now with their sugar. So we'll be keeping an eye on that in Canadian stores over the next little while.
It's not a surprise considering the size of the domestic population, the second biggest domestic population in the world. So to say, hey, we're the second biggest producer of wheat or sugar in the world, not surprising as a matter of scale of economy and considering the climate as well. And this is something that we're going to be exploring a little bit with Craig Oliver later in the show, Mike. I've got these two clips from NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg talking about the way in which the world may consider moving away from free trade models as a result of international conflict, which is so funny because for years and years, free trade was the thing held up as saying, this is what will stop international conflict. So we're seeing all these places around the world, whether it's Brexit in the UK, whether it's renegotiating NAFTA in North America, whether it's some of these domestic controls in India, we're seeing more and more countries just taking that little tiny shift towards a more protectionist economy. And it's fascinating to watch 20 to 25 years after the major push for free trade after the fall of the Iron Curtain.
Yeah, it feels like at many points in the last 20 years, the globalization had become a bit of a dirty word in sort of the fringe areas of the population. And now it's front and center, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's no longer about being global economies. In many instances, it's about taking care of yourself at home and not depending on a country halfway across the world because they're taking care of themselves first. You've got to maybe start making plans to do the same. So it is interesting how globalization or anti-globalization has now become kind of the norm instead of being, a sort of a fringe movement. And you'd see those protests at all the G7, G20 summits, right? We saw here in Toronto, there was a whole anti-globalization movement against that, but it still felt at the time like it was a very small proportion of the population that was active in fighting against it. Now it's becoming a little bit more mainstream.
There's also been a little bit of a shift, right? When you think about the G20 conference in Toronto in 2010 or Quebec City in 2001 or Seattle in 1998, a lot of that was more, say, I'm going to use very general terms here. A lot of that was considered more of a progressive political side, where it was a lot more folks on the left saying, you know, this is going to take away some like national standards and national authorities. And now there's probably still folks on the left being very concerned about the corporatization of the world. But a lot of folks on sort of the national side of the right have said, oh gosh, maybe you guys were right about this, but they won't actually admit that the left was right. They'll say, no, it's a different reason why we're not happy about globalization. But in the end, it's all the same thing.
Yeah. And I think that's a valid concern here, is that, when we're depending on a country or a market halfway across the world, of course you're going to be concerned about standards that are being followed, or in some cases not followed.
Yeah, or labor standards more generally.
All those things, you know, in products that we are consuming. And I think, you know, to a certain degree, if we start bringing that manufacturing back, you still have to be worried about those standards. Mm-hmm. And why? Because bringing it back here isn't going to make anything cheaper. So we're living in a world of inflation, and being told by, you know, the former Bank of Canada governor, Stephen Poulos, to get ready for stagflation. Mm-hmm.
Inflation and a stagnant economy.
This is not going anywhere. And so if that happens and suddenly we're looking to bring manufacturing back here, or at least a limited amount of manufacturing back here, that doesn't make products any cheaper. If anything, it's going to make life a little bit more expensive, and you really still, you know, have to stay on top of those manufacturing standards because you don't want to be consuming products that are being made off the backs of people, right? You want to be supportive of the worker.
And look no further than a lack of standards in producing baby formula south of the United States right now, right? We have to shut down the largest producer because they weren't up to standards. So it's not like North America has some kind of magical standard in place. We're pretty tricky too. Hey, Mike, we got to scoot, but we'll talk to you for the regional news in a couple minutes.
You got it. Thanks, Dave.
That's Mike Ross with the big business story of the day. When you're done listening to this podcast, you should check out some of the other fun stuff that AMI Audio has on offer. Sam Robinson is one of the producers of the AMI Podcast Roundup, which you can find on Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Hey, Sam, what's on the docket today?
Well, just launching tomorrow morning, we have a new episode of Low Vision Moments. The episode is going to be called Say My Name, and in it, Jenny's guest is Joshua Cintron, a photographer out of Brooklyn, New York, and they're going to be trading stories and making light of things in the way that only Jenny Bovard can. All about the names, and they have been called on the street and being called out on the street. So, try and make light of that, frankly, and they will.
As someone who is also an albino, I've had a few people holler out of cars at me as well about my lack of pigmentation. Jenny Bovard also going to be on the show tomorrow for the food and beverage column. So lots of Jenny available for folks tomorrow if they want to get their dose of the Bovard. Hey, Sam, thank you for this.
You're welcome.
Coming up next, community reporter Guy Carrière in Sudbury will talk about this year's Northern Lights Festival Boreal. Always fun catching up with Guy. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's head a little bit up north to Sudbury, Ontario, to catch up with community reporter Guy Carrière. Hey, good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Dave.
So, Guy, it is indeed fishing season, full-fledged. None of this ice fishing stuff for the hardcores. This is casual guy fishing season, but there's nothing casual about the way that you fish, Guy. So what's it like being back on the boat?
Oh, it feels great, Dave. That transition period between, let's say, early April and, you know, kind of mid-May, where, you know, waiting for the ice to come off and things to go back to normal. It's definitely a long transition period. I'm glad it's over. Finally got to get back out on the boat this past weekend for the first time, which was wonderful. I got some sun, caught a couple fish. have to say, though, we encountered a storm Friday evening here in Sudbury. Definitely nowhere near the magnitude of what happened in southern Ontario. But that definitely did affect the fish. So I was out Saturday morning. You could definitely tell they were spooked. They weren't very aggressive at all. They were kind of all hunched together in the bottom in a little ball, really not reacting. So it wasn't too successful, but it was still nice to get out and enjoy the sun and the wind and be back out on the boat finally.
Yeah, still a May-long weekend day on the boat, which can go a long, long way. Well, Guy, maybe if you caught a couple of those fish, you could put them in your new smoker, because I hear you're jumping into the cooking, smoking game. What's made you want to get one of these bad boys?
Oh, man. You know what? I had a friend who bought one years ago and sampled a few things that he made, and it was delicious. I absolutely loved it. So I've had my eyes on one for quite a while now, about 2 years. So I was in the process of just, you know, saving up some money on the side, trying to get one without really affecting our finances. And then I think it was like 2 weeks ago, it just so happened that the one I was looking at was on sale. So my wife said, you know what, let's just go ahead, you know, we'll pay the difference and we'll call it your Father's Day gift. And
nice. Said,
absolutely. So that bad boy has already seen some steak and some pork chops and some chicken. I do have plans to make that fish that we caught last weekend, but I want to gather up a few more fillets, make it worthwhile, invite a few friends over, and really have a nice fish dinner.
Nice. Forget a fish fry. It'll be a fish smoke with Guy Carrier. That's and the right. Gang. Guy, how are you finding the accessibility on the smoker?
Pardon?
How are you finding the accessibility on the smoker? You finding it relatively easy to use?
No, it's not really completely accessible. I do rely on my wife to set it, program the time and temperature and the smoke and whatnot. They did have a model that does offer Bluetooth connectivity, which I strongly considered. But after reading the reviews, I've been told that it's not very stable at all. You're constantly dropping connection and signal. So I didn't feel as though that was really worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, if you got some sighted assistance to really set the time and the temperature and the smoke, and then you just let it go, then you're good to go.
Well, Guy, once we're done having the fish smoke at your house, we can head off to the Northern Lights Festival Boreal, which is coming back to Sudbury this summer. What makes this year's event so special?
Well, this year's event is a little bit more special for two reasons. One, just the fact that it's coming back, you know, post-COVID. The last few years, it's really been non-existent in terms of being an in-person event. So that's one great aspect to it. The other is that this year is their 50th year, which is pretty impressive, you know, to be able to put up an event of that magnitude for 50 years running. And I mean, obviously it has grown over the years. But I mean, 50 years to have an event like this is quite an accolade, and I commend them for it.
So what goes into the festival? We talking some food, some music? What's cracking?
There's a little bit of everything, Dave. There's definitely music. There's music scheduled all throughout the weekend. I couldn't even begin to list how many acts are supposed to be on stage. There's tons of them. Unfortunately, a lot of them I've never heard of, but that's why you go there and you check them out.
Yeah, this is a symptom of getting older, Guy. More and more of the lists of these music festivals, it's like, no, I don't know. I don't know that person, but maybe I'll go anyway.
I'm still 39 for a few more months, so I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that. But definitely lots of music. There's going to be some food vendors, some artists, some sales, some crafts, some you know, different local vendors, things like that, activities. And hopefully the weather cooperates. I mean, they're scheduled to have it July 7th through the 10th here at Bell Park in Sudbury. So hopefully the weather cooperates. They get some nice sun. And hopefully it all goes well.
Do you think you'll make the trip out there?
I don't know. My weekends are pretty devoted to fishing this summer, so I can't say I can commit to that. But you know what? When I'm at home at night, I'm not that far away from Bell Park, where if I'm sitting outside on my deck, I'll probably be able to hear the entertainment anyways.
Yeah, so I love that.
It's kind of like
Yeah, where I used to live in Ottawa, I used to be able to stand on my balcony and hear some of the music from Blues Fest, depending on the artist, which was always really nice. You know, more private bathrooms, cheaper beer. It's the way I like it.
Absolutely. You always got a good seat in the house.
Yeah, always a good seat that way. Hey, Guy, thank you for this, man. All the best fishing and enjoy some of the summer season around Sudbury.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dave.
That's Guy Carrière. If you want some more information about the Northern Lights Festival Boreal, it runs from July 7th to 10th, and you can visit their website. This one's quite simple, actually. NLFB.ca. I like that one. NLFB.ca. But if you don't have a chance to write that one down fast enough, AMI.ca/nowblog. AMI.ca/nowblog is where you can go to find out more. Let's play a couple of news stories to wrap up the hour. And looking abroad, following up on a story we shared with you last week, delegations from Sweden and Finland are scheduled to hold talks with senior Turkish officials in an effort to overcome Turkey's objections to their bids to join the NATO alliance. Charles de Ledesma has that story.
Turkey says it opposes the two Nordic countries' membership in the military alliance, citing grievances with Sweden's and, to a lesser extent, Finland's perceived support to groups it views as terrorists. It also accuses the two of imposing arms exports restrictions on Turkey. Turkey's objections have dampened Stockholm's and Helsinki's hopes for a quick membership in NATO amid Russia's invasion of Ukraine and puts NATO's credibility at stake. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Hey, remember, you can always share your thoughts on what we say or do or share or show on this TV show. So feel free to reach out. Feedback@AMI.ca. Feedback@AMI.ca. @AMI Audio on Twitter. Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook. Or 1-866-509-4545 is the phone number. After the break, it's the regional news update. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio, AMI TV, AMI.ca, and the mighty AMI Audio Podcast Network. I'm Dave Brown. It's Wednesday, May the 25th, 2022. Coming up in the second hour of the show, we'll talk politics with Craig Oliver. We'll discuss what's going on in regards to the Russia-Ukraine war and some of the discussions going on at the Davos Conference, the World Economic Forum in Switzerland, ship debate for the Federal Conservative Party. And there's so much more going on in the world of politics. We'll talk all about that with Craig. And Mike Agarbo will stop by. We'll discuss the implications of Canada banning Huawei from 5G networks. Let's bring in Mike Ross for the regional news update.
The Victoria International Airport that reopened late yesterday after all commercial flights were canceled for much of the day following the discovery of something police said looked like an incendiary device in someone's luggage. The RCMP said the suspicious package was identified in the departures check-in area of the airport around 1:30 p.m. during a security scan. It was seized by Canadian Air Transport Security Authority staff. Police were called and a wing of the airport was closed to ensure travelers were safe. A news release from the airport late Tuesday said the checked baggage contained an incendiary item and inert surplus military supplies. To the prairies. Some Alberta cabinet ministers say they're considering running for the United Conservative Party leadership, while others are responding to the question with a hard no. Government House Leader and Environment Minister Jason Nixon says he has not ruled it out, while Transportation Minister Rajan Sani and Children's Services Minister Rebecca Schultz haven't made up their minds yet. Finance Minister Travis Taves and Labour Minister Casey Madu aren't answering. And Justice Minister Tyler Shandro, Advanced Education Minister Dimitrios Nikolidis, and Health Minister Jason Copping said they won't be seeking the job. Premier, Jason Kenney said last week he will quit once a new leader is chosen after he received 51% support in a leadership review vote. To Ontario, Toronto police say they've made 5 arrests after a municipal fireworks event on Victoria Day. The force says a fireworks display was held along Ashbridges Bay on Monday night and was largely peaceful. Police allege that 3 people were arrested for setting off fireworks, including a 19-year-old man who aimed the fireworks into a crowd. Police also allege two people were arrested on a transit bus after making threats with a gun, with a recovered firearm deemed to be a replica, and one person released with no charge. Police say they arrested 19 people in the Ashbridges Bay and Woodbine Beach area on Sunday. And in the Atlantic region, experts are predicting another active hurricane season in the Atlantic Ocean this year, with up to 21 named storms expected to form. Meteorologist Bob Robichaud says there's only a 10% chance this year's season will see fewer than 14 named storms, which is the 30-year average. Robichaud says of the 14 to 21 expected named storms, between 6 and 10 will develop into hurricanes, and 3 to 6 of those will become major hurricanes. He says whether or not the storms cause damage depends on whether they make landfall, and that depends on the conditions of the day. Those are your top regional headlines going coast to coast across the country.
Thank you very much, Mike. Let's bring in Jeff Ryman for Sports Chats. Jeff, I think perhaps the best thing right now in all of sports, I said this yesterday, is the Battle of Alberta. People who stayed up to watch that game last night, even after Edmonton goes up 3-0, got such a treat. Got Calgary roaring back, tying the game 3-3. Rasmus Anderson scoring a goal from over 100 feet away. A beautiful 9-iron chip past Edmonton goalie Mike Smith. Come on, Jeff. It's like the best thing going right now. It's so good.
Yeah, it's exciting. It really is exciting, Dave. Like we said, we've seen a 9-6 game in which I believe Edmonton actually came back and tied things up in that game as well before Calgary just went on another tear and scored three more on top of their six they already did in that one game. And then, like you mentioned yesterday, there's really no such thing as a safe lead in this matchup, which is just super exciting. And on top of that, Dave, the other matchups in the NHL haven't really, really good. Ended up being a complete sweep by the two-time reigning champions, Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, so that was that a bust. Series, that was a bust.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a bust. That was when Florida can only score three goals in four games. It's not going to have the same flair as the amount of goals, the amount of animosity.
Edmonton's scoring three goals in one period.
Yeah, Dave, this series has literally had it all. Between amazing goals, there's been obviously that grit factor, especially after Milan Lucic ran over Mike Smith in game number three.
Yeah.
And then we've seen ridiculous comebacks. And on that end, I was now 3-1 in this series, and it's just 1-1 away.
Jeff, slow down for a second. Your internet is betraying you in a big way. So hold on a second. Let's give it a chance to recalibrate for a second. Your internet's like, Jeff, you're too excited. I've got to restrict your Wi-Fi. We're not going to let you communicate to the good people of Canada on the quality of this series. But yeah, I want you to pick up on what you were saying there, Jeff, in regards to a little bit of the buffet of goodness that we've had here. And I also love that national media narrative last night is, oh, Connor McDavid had a quiet night. He had two assists. That's not a quiet night.
Yeah, Dave, actually, it was funny. Before the game, I was checking all the betting sites, and Connor McDavid was supposed to go over a point and a half, and the odds weren't even that great.
Oh, my gosh.
Minus 175 over 1.5 points.
Yeah.
Vegas was expecting basically David.
Okay,
that's just how good he is.
Jeff, I tell you what, man, I think we need to pull the plug today. Your internet is not even allowing you to get full sentences out. So unfortunately, Jeff, we got to say goodbye to you today, but you're also not going to be here the next couple days because you're going to be doing a special broadcast at W. Ross McDonald with Kelly and Company. So we wish you best of luck for those special anniversary celebrations at W. Ross, and we wish you happy sports watching as well.
You too, Dave. See you later.
So I just want to comment a little bit further on what happened in that game last night, because that was just a monster. I had a delightful time staying up to watch that game. In fact, anybody who stayed up late last night to watch sports was rewarded, with the San Francisco Giants and New York Mets having a 13-12 game with nearly a dozen runs scored in the last two innings of the game. Something to be said about that West Coast flavor. But I know, talking to a few folks on the ground in Alberta right now, the city of Edmonton and the city of Calgary are both enthralled with what's happening. Calgary obviously not particularly enthralled with the way their team is down 3-1 in this series, on the brink of elimination, on the brink of extinction. They're not too thrilled with the way their goaltender, Jakob Markstrom, has been very subpar for the vast majority of the series. But the pubs have been lit. Red Mile in Calgary, Blue Mile in Edmonton. People are really feeling that one. And it's something that we're always saying, that unless you're there, it's tough to truly register what it means. But talking to a few Albertans today and a couple of group chats and a few Zoom calls last night, people are fired up about this one. And Edmonton, one win away from a trip to the conference finals, which is not the crowning, it's not the culmination of where we're at with Connor McDavid as one of the best hockey players in the world, certainly the best hockey player currently playing hockey. But my goodness, there's a lot of excitement at Edmonton, a little bit of tension in Calgary, and it's very, very exciting. I also want to note that the Carolina Hurricanes losing again last night to the New York Rangers. Carolina having yet to win a road game during the playoffs. If they want to win the Stanley Cup, and they're one of the teams who are expected to do so, they might want to consider starting to win some road games, because Tampa is sitting at home right now, resting, taking it easy, and Carolina appears to find themselves in another war with the New York Rangers. And big shouts to the Blue Jays. 8-1 win last night over the St. Louis Cardinals. Danny Jansen, catcher, coming off the IL last week, hitting two dingers last night. Good stuff by the Jays. The Jays have an off night, but there's lots more hockey coming your way on Sportsnet and CBC. And of course, the basketball tonight, Miami and Boston tied 2-2 in that series. Those games will be on TSN, although it's Wednesday, which means I will be watching wrestling. Grace Schofield is watching the National Weather Update.
Thanks so much, Dave. Here is your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada. We'll start off in Corner Brook, Newfoundland, where it is mainly sunny today with a high of 17. In Charlottetown, PEI, it's mainly sunny with a high of 20. And we've got another mainly sunny place in St. John, New Brunswick, with a high of 14. In Quebec City, it's sunny today with a high of 21. In Toronto, there's a mix of sun and cloud today, but it'll become a bit more cloudy this afternoon with a high of 20. In Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, there's a mix of sun and cloud, with some more cloud coming in this morning, and a high of 16. In Brandon, Manitoba, a mix of sun and cloud with 30% chance of showers this afternoon and a risk of a thunderstorm, with a high of 21. In Regina, it's mainly sunny today, with a risk of a thunderstorm this afternoon and some showers, with a high of 24. In Lethbridge, there's a mix of sun and cloud today, and a high of 20. In Red Deer, Alberta, a mix of sun and cloud today with a high of 20. And then over in Whitehorse, Yukon, it's mainly cloudy today with a high of 11. In Kelowna, BC, it's mainly cloudy, but that will clear up around noon with a high of 22. And in Vancouver, BC, there's a mix of sun and cloud with a chance of showers this morning and a high of 18. That was your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada.
Grace, did I hear a rumor that later in the hour you're going to be doing the What's Trending reports?
I will. I will be back for trending, and I've got a good story for you.
All right, so that's going to be in about 35 minutes' time, so you don't want to miss that one. Thank you very much, Grace. Coming up after the break, Canada is banning Huawei from the 5G network. Mike Agarbo of The App Show will discuss some of those implications. But first, Snapchat appears to be in a financial pickle. Here's Alex Stone with Tech Trends.
Investopedia's Caleb Silver says Snap had high expectations for 2022.
It has really good active engagement from its users. It's been producing revenue. It's got good advertising partners. Things look good just a month ago, and wow, have things changed.
This week, company CEO Evan Spiegel filed a report with the SEC.
Basically, lowering its guidance for profits and revenue for the current quarter.
The news sent Snap shares plunging early this week, and it took shares of other big tech firms like Meta and Pinterest down with it.
This is a huge ripple effect throughout tech, and the entire advertising world needs to pay attention.
Silver says tech companies are often a leading indicator for broader economic trends.
There's a lot of concerns about a pullback in the economy, a potential recession, which means less spending in general across the economy, but you're going to feel it first through the digital economy, because that's where the big ad dollars are being spent these days.
With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, EBC News.
Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's talk tech with Mike Agarbo of The App Show. Of course, you can find that program Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio. And you can find Mike in Vancouver, BC. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
So, Mike, let's talk about a story that broke late last week. The Canadian government announced that it would ban the use of both Huawei and ZTE's equipment from 5G networks. Now, Mike, we did play a bunch of sound from Jean-Philippe Champagne as well as Marco Mendicino talking about some of the security concerns here that Canada had in regard to these two Chinese tech giants being part of the 5G network. So I want to jump ahead a little bit in the conversation. What does this mean for telecom companies in Canada?
It means a huge hit to their bottom line. They've invested literally billions and billions of dollars in purchasing equipment from these two companies, especially Huawei. Huawei has made some of the more advanced equipment out in the market and the cheaper equipment as well. So it will hurt the big guys, and it'll especially hurt the little guys here in Canada as well. So they're going to have to pull all the 5G equipment by 2024, and they will also have to pull their existing 4G and LTE equipment as well by 2028. So billions of dollars, but I think that will hit back to the consumers eventually.
Right. What is the impact on consumers? Because when we're talking about pulling some of that technology back, or maybe even slowing the expansion, I can see how underserved populations are very much going to be impacted by this.
Yeah, there's no free ride here. I mean, they're businesses, they're corporations. So if they have a hit to their costs or their bottom line, that has got to come from somewhere. And typically that comes from the end of the line, the consumers or the customers. So I expect that there will be some price increases in their services in the coming years.
Mike, where do you think this is going to leave people who use Huawei cell phones or ZTE tablets? Because these are pretty common consumer products in Canada as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting just to see what the public perception is. Their products are still available to the public. The cell phones and laptops and wearables, they haven't been banned. But the perception has taken a hit, right? You know, when you talk to people about these companies now, they typically don't always have a favorable overview of them just because of everything that's going on. So definitely their other businesses here will take a hit as well.
Yeah, I just find it fascinating, right, that we say, hey, these two companies can't be involved in infrastructural technology, but can still be involved in consumer technology. And of course, the stakes are different between those two levels. But it does strike me as a little bit odd that we say, a little concerned about these companies, but if you want to keep them in your back pocket or put like your banking information on them, that's fine. Enjoy.
It is interesting, you know, but you have to keep in mind, though, you know, much like all these other tech companies that are making software and hardware, they typically have to adhere to, you know, certain international standards when it comes to privacy and what have you, and they've got those designations. So I don't know if they're necessarily unsafe devices out there, to your point. So yeah, it'll just be interesting to see how much longer they can continue to sell their products in North America and the European Union, just because of the volume of sales. Like, will it decrease because of all this? We'll have to see.
Right, it's a brand association thing, right? The people here banning 5G, banning Huawei and banning ZTE, they're going to say, "Oh, banning Huawei and ZTE, but they're trying to sell me this phone." I can see how there'd be definitely a little bit of a dissonance there, and how that market could dry up. And it's worth noting, Mike, just for the sake of balance. statements here, the Chinese government saying that there is no nefarious play here from these two companies, and that Canada and the other alliance members of the Five Eyes, being Australia, New Zealand, England, the U.S. and Canada, that they're overblowing this. This is political. So, you know, there is that perspective to be shared there, but I don't think you or I are necessarily qualified to evaluate that argument.
Well, it's interesting, right? You know, they're going after them with these technologies here. You know, I look around my house and, you know, everything's made in China. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
China is the manufacturing center of the world. So, yeah, you can pick on these two companies right now. But again, you just have to look at everything else that's made in that country, too. So it's going to be an interesting few years.
Mike, let's talk about a different tech company, which is Apple, who are facing a lawsuit around AirPods due to an incident that a 12-year-old had. So what happened here in regards to an Amber Alert and some AirPods?
Yeah, this is interesting and, you know, unfortunate. Apparently this 12-year-old was listening to something on his AirPod Pros, and an Amber Alert came in, I guess, on the cell phone that he was listening to it on. And as you know, with the Amber Alerts, they just kind of spike up the volume, you know, when you get them on your smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently this caused some damage to his ears. It apparently pierced the eardrums, ruptured them, and now they say he has to wear a hearing aid for the rest of his life.
It's one of those stories where it's really striking and it's really jarring, and it certainly leads to some questions about accountability all across the board, right? It leads to, why are the Amber Alerts so loud in the first place, right? We understand there's an emergency here, but is this really the kind of thing that should be blowing out eardrums? But there's also a very specific concern about volume settings on the AirPods Pro and perhaps certain controls that users don't have. So what are these concerns around the volume settings?
Well, they claim basically that the AirPods don't automatically reduce control limit or increment notification or alert volumes to safe levels when they come out. So, you know, I haven't tried this myself, obviously, but, you know, it's something that we're going to have to look into a little more. You know, especially with, you know, younger children, it's always a concern to make sure that any type of headphones or earbuds that they're using have safe volume levels. I mean, they actually make specific headphones for kids that have reduced volumes on there. So it'll be interesting to see how Apple responds and, you know, how many other cases like this have happened out there.
Yeah, I know, for example, on my Android phone, there is a very strict volume control. If you want to go any higher, you need to give it kind of an approval. So, for example, if something comes in, even like an Amber Alert, or when we had the storm warning here in Ontario on Saturday, if you're listening to your headphones, yes, you will get blasted, you will notice, but there's still a regulator inside the phone, inside the headphones, to say, no, it cannot go louder than this without approval.
Yeah. Again, it remains to be seen how, you know, Apple has dealt with that. You know, mm-hmm. There have been people that have complained on their support website just about things like, you know, incoming phone calls, for example. They're listening to music quietly. A phone call comes in, it just kind of blasts that at full volume. So it's, you know, obviously, if Apple wasn't aware of it before, they certainly are now.
They sure are. Hey, Mike, let's go back to a story relating to China, because Airbnb is shutting down domestic rental, where the zero COVID policy in various major cities are dealing with rolling and ongoing lockdowns. Just out of curiosity, to lay some landscape here, how big an operation does Airbnb have in China?
It wasn't as big as the rest of the world. Apparently, it only accounted for 1% of their sales. So that being said, you know, I think around 25 million people have booked Airbnbs in China since they actually went into that country back in 2016. So, I mean, there is, you know, a good chunk of folks that are using the service, but I think they've been having a difficult time, especially during the pandemic, and that now they have the zero COVID policy where they lock down entire cities. So it looks like it's more of a pain for them right now. So that's why they're going to be exiting that country for the time being.
Yeah, we saw very similar policies or similar issues popping up on Airbnb in the pandemic here during some of our initial lockdowns, some of the more stringent ones. And of course, things regulated pretty quickly on the Airbnb front. Does this appear simply to be a temporary decision? So, for example, if China either reconsiders the zero COVID policy, or let's keep our fingers crossed here, one day the pandemic actually comes to an end, that Airbnb will make its way back into the Chinese market?
I would say never, but apparently it was a difficult operation even before the pandemic. It was expensive and complicated to run. I think they even had to rename themselves to something that the local population could pronounce easier. So I don't know if they're going to be coming running back anytime soon.
Interesting. We're going to be exploring some of this economic protectionism a little bit in the next segment with Craig Oliver, our veteran political correspondent. It seems like it's one more story, whether it's Starbucks or McDonald's in China, Airbnb in China, McDonald's and Airbnb in Russia. Okay, Dave, talk properly. McDonald's and Starbucks in Russia or Airbnb in China. It seems like there is some of this pulling back going on in terms of the integrated economy. So it's a fascinating one. Hey, Mike, thank you for these stories today. Have a wonderful day out there.
Thanks, everyone.
That is Mike Agarbo. He's the host of The App Show. You can find that Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio. And, of course, you can find Mike on Twitter at Mike Agarbo, MikeAgerbo, at Mike Agarbo on Twitter. Coming up next, we'll talk politics with Craig Oliver. We'll reflect a little bit on the school shooting yesterday in Texas. And we'll talk about some of the deeper implications going on where world trade, free trade, and the war in Russia and Ukraine intersect. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. As we reported off the top of the show, 19 children and two adults were killed in an elementary school shooting in Texas yesterday. President Joe Biden says the time has come to bring in stricter gun control.
It's time for those who obstruct or delay or block the common sense gun laws. We need to let you know that we will not forget. We can do so much more. We have to do more.
Let's get Craig Oliver's perspective on this. He's a veteran political correspondent, and he is going to talk about some of the intertwining politics that go into this story. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Dave.
Craig, what's your reaction to the story that came out of Texas yesterday and some of the conversations going on around gun control in the U.S. in this moment?
I think the best comment, except for one I'm coming to, but before that, is what the president said last night, which is to observe all of these other countries, all of which are very similar to the United States, Canada, Britain, France, great democracies. And so why aren't they having problems like this? He's asking himself, why America? And it was heartbreaking to hear him. This is a man who on this issue has given up. He offered no effort at anything that would change things in any significant way. We talk about the two solitudes in Canada, but in the United States, the two solitudes between Republicans and Democrats leads to dead children. It is, but the real response yesterday, Dave, and give me time to tell this story, was from the coach of the Gold State Warriors, the famous basketball team.
Steve Kerr,
you've got it. And last night, before his game, usual thing, we're going to win and what we're going to do. Instead, he made a cri de coeur, the most emotional, tearful response I have ever heard to this continuing slaughter. And what he said is absolutely true, and it's what I would say if I were doing a commentary, which is that 50 Republican senators refused to allow any changes of any kind. Even in this case, there is sitting on the legislative docket in Washington a move for background checks before you sell all of these lethal weapons, especially the young people. Before you do that, you got to do a background check. Even that, these senators kill. And that's why there's no progress between Republicans and Democrats, or increasingly even in America. And everyone, if they could, should hear Steve Kerr's remarks.
Well, Craig, You referenced what Joe Biden had to say in regards to what makes America different in regards to gun control and this violence. We actually have that sound from the first segment of the show as well. So let's actually give that one a listen, and we'll see if we can find that Steve Kerr sound by the end of the segment as well.
They have mental health problems. They have domestic disputes in other countries. They have people who are lost. But these kinds of mass shootings never happen with the kind of frequency they happen in America. Why? Why are we willing to live with this carnage? Why do we keep letting this happen? Where in God's name is our backbone to have the courage to deal with it and stand up to the lobbies?
Craig, you mentioned the way in which America creates some legal wranglings. And this morning, as I am somewhat at a loss for words, as we once again reflect on one of these mass shootings, I thought after preschoolers got gunned down in Newtown, Connecticut, that we would be sort of much further along in this conversation. It still baffles me when I look at the way laws are passed in America, where a Supreme Court justice can be approved in the Senate with 50 plus one, but gun control can't be put into place without a 60-40 split in the Senate, without 60% approval. It really baffles me on how America is going to make any legislative progress on anything and solve those two solitudes that you described when the system itself seems to hinder any possibility of that kind of progress.
All my years covering the Reagan administration, even then, it had become, what's the word I'm reaching for? There is no ability to bring the sides together. Mm-hmm. A conversation, an exchange of views has almost become impossible on this issue. Some others too, but for instance, abortion. But especially on this issue, they can't even frame a debate. There's no hope. And I don't think it's been this bad in the United States since the American Civil War, when there's no ability here to compromise, and I don't know how that gets resolved. And that's a tragedy of what's happening. And the first thing that every American said last night was, oh no, not again. They could have said, oh no, not again yesterday, or the day before, or the day before that, for instance. That's how common all of this is becoming.
Yeah. Last week alone, Craig, we had to make choices on this show on whether we were going to cover the Buffalo supermarket shooting, the Milwaukee Arena shooting, the California church shooting. We could cover this every day, but there's something so graphic and so horrific when we see it children, when we see it in schools, whether it be Parkland, Florida, in Texas. Craig, you made reference to that sound from Golden State Warriors head coach Steve Kerr. Our intrepid producer Sam Robinson went onto the wire and pulled that out. So let's actually give that a listen.
Mitch Wonderful. McConnell, I ask all of you senators who refuse to do anything about the violence and school shootings and supermarket shootings, I ask you, are you going to put your own desire for power ahead of the lives of our children and our elderly and our churchgoers? Because that's what it looks like.
Craig, I know that's just a snippet of the sound, and we certainly would encourage folks.
Thank you. Thank you. He was in tears at one point. And this is a big, tough football player and coach. And I think he can probably reach more people, more importantly, if you understand where I'm going, than the president himself could do. But as for the president, it's worth remembering that he lost his son himself. And so that he understands what a tremendous emotional toll it is on families to lose a son or daughter.
Mm. Craig, that it's a somber note, but it's one that we'll move from, because at the heart of this, it is remembering that this is indeed a human story. We can talk about the politics all day, but the human suffering is really what makes the story jarring. Craig, let's jump over to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, the war in Ukraine. I want to play a couple of sound bites for you here, starting with the Defense Minister of Canada announcing more military aid for Ukraine. Anita Anand says that Canada will donate over 20,000 artillery rounds of 155mm standard ammo. She says Canada is building on the aid they've already delivered.
We have supplied Ukraine with small arms, specialized equipment like cameras for military drones, armored vehicles and the heavy artillery guns I mentioned, namely M777 howitzers. And Canada has trained Ukrainian forces in the use of these heavy artillery guns.
Craig, the topic of Russia-Ukraine was also front and center at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. I want to play you a few sounds first of European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen pledging that the bloc will continue to invest massively in support of Ukraine.
Ukraine must win this war. And Putin's aggression must be a strategic failure.
Von der Leyen went further in discussing the stakes of the conflict.
This is not just a matter of Ukraine's survival. This is not just an issue of European security. This is putting our whole international order into question.
Craig, I'm going to hold the sound there for a second because there's another thread I want to pull out in a moment with NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg. But I'm genuinely curious from your perspective, how much support can Ukraine's allies give the country before they actually have to engage in the conflict?
Dave, I think we're dancing around a subject and comment that is not common and is risky. So let's just do that.
Mm.
Canada, and especially the big democratic nations like France and Germany and Britain, are contributing billions of dollars, billions, hundreds of billions in taxpayers' money, money which could be used for any other number of things. They're spending all of these hundreds of billions on military hardware, on weapons, to try to keep this beleaguered country alive and give it the ability to defend itself. But at some point, those countries are going to have to start taking a close look at how long can we afford to do this? And they may have to, and I'd be surprised if they haven't thought about it or doing it now, try to reach out to the Russians, and also to the leaders in of Ukraine, other countries, the president of Ukraine.
Yeah, Volodymyr Zelensky, yeah.
And say to them, can't you two come to some kind of an agreement? What agreements are possible? What is it you're willing to give up? What is your bottom line? That has to happen, and I think it has to happen relatively soon. It needs to happen. I just don't know how anybody can win this. So if you can't win something, but the problem is the Russian president, I think, knows he's finished if he hasn't got a big win. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think he's not ready to negotiate in any way.
Craig,
especially if a few things are going his way, finally.
Yeah, it does seem like the momentum in that conflict is certainly beginning to move in their direction, certainly as Mariupol has fallen to Russian troops, and many areas in the east are certainly very much becoming under Russian control as well. Craig, I want to play you a different set of sounds from the Davos Forum, from the World Economic Forum, and this one's from NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, saying the war in Ukraine is proof that doing business with authoritarian regimes poses security risks for democratic countries.
This is about Russia, but also about China, another authoritarian regime that does not share our values and that undermines the rules-based international order.
And Craig, I want to play one more sound from Stoltenberg elaborating on his concerns.
Freedom is more important than free trade. The protection of our values is more important than profit.
Craig, when you hear the Secretary General of NATO discussing the prospect of pulling back on free trade, does this feel like another shift towards protectionism that we've already seen in places like the UK, the US, and even now a little bit in India in the last couple of weeks?
David, was protectionism, and exactly protectionism, starting in the United States, basically, with the America First policy. Now we're talking about the 1920s, starting in 1921, ending with the Great Crash in 1929. That was all brought about by a refusal of certain countries to trade with other countries, more and more countries deciding that, like America First, they should just worry about themselves and not worrying about trading partners. We don't have to sacrifice our beliefs and our values in order to trade with China. China is now the world's second greatest economic power. And we're going to say we're losing our values, so we're going to quit trading with them. And many other countries, we don't have to like these countries to trade with them. We don't have to sacrifice our principles to trade with them. I think those people we just heard are very off base and who are threatening an outcome which could be a disaster and another 1929 crash.
Yeah. Yeah, Craig, I'm inclined to agree. For all of the warts that free trade has, it's that kind of economic integration that is supposed to prevent global conflict. That was one of the lessons pulled from protectionism in the 1920s and as we've moved forward. So it's an interesting conversation. I know it's a little abstract, but I wanted to get your take on that one. Let's come back to a couple Canadian political stories. The Quebec government has passed Bill 96 that further strengthens language protection for French in the province. And beyond limiting some healthcare and legal options for English speakers, there are now going to be some educational limitations placed on students in Quebec, particularly at the CEGEP level. Now, CEGEPs are essentially a mandatory junior college for all Quebec students, where oftentimes that's where Anglophone kids and Francophone kids get to integrate and kind of hang out for the first time. So, Craig, what does the targeting of CEGEP suggest to you? And does that shift the way we're having this conversation?
I think it is more evidence that Quebec is moving toward becoming seen, unfortunately, as an intolerant political entity. Because, for instance, what we're doing here is we are restricting the ability of English-speaking young people to get an education. There's nothing less than that going on here. And they are strangling these junior colleges, CEGEPs, as they're called. They are strangling them by saying they're putting limits on how big they can get because they are immensely popular, growing fast, these colleges. They're not just putting a limit on how large they can become, but they're also saying no matter how much the population of Francophone Quebec grows, they can never get any bigger than they are now. This is a disastrous policy. And guess who brought that to us? The separatist party in the National Assembly.
Mm-hmm. The Coalition Avenir Quebec.
What they want to achieve is a fight with English-speaking Canada, which could lead once again to Quebecers reacting and saying, we need a referendum. Mm-hmm. That's what the separatists want. The Bloc Québécois we're thinking of, and well, they claim not to be separatists, but they are, and so is the premier too. And for the moment, they decided they were willing to accept a coalition, but increasingly, they're moving toward the separatists they really are and putting on that coat.
Well, we'll see a lot in the election in Quebec later this year how some of these issues end up being front and center. Okay, Craig, a couple quick hitters here. Let's talk about the Ontario election because it kind of feels like steady as she goes with 1 week left. Last week I called the campaign quiet. I'm actually looking for a stronger synonym this week. Silent, that's too strong. But what about listless, mousy? In other words, is this one of the quieter campaigns that you can remember?
Well, it's also passionate. It's also lacking in passion. I've never seen such a passionless. And by the way, the premier is running an invisible campaign. The media is not told about events he's attending, so they can't go there and cover him. He has tried to be as lowball and as he can. He's hiding away in plain sight, if you like it. Because what he was told by his advisors, do nothing that risks the commanding lead you have going into this campaign. And that commanding lead has been untouched. Mm-hmm. So the only hope, really, is the fight for second place. In other words, if the Quebec vote collapsed, and this is what to watch for in the final week, and went to the Liberal Party, there is a possibility there that they could become large enough with a little bit of support from the New Democrats to hold them to a minority. And if the conservatives and the premier are held to a minority, then the other two parties can defeat them. And there is a possibility they could lose this election, not by losing the election, but by losing parliament, if you see what I mean.
I sure do. Hey, Craig, let's get a quick thought here on tonight's conservative leadership French language debate. We know that the road to conservative leadership doesn't necessarily run through Quebec, but what are the stakes tonight for these leaders if they actually want to win the next Canadian general election?
Well, it should be all, if that's the way it turns out, it should be all about Bill 96. This is so new. We don't yet know where many of our political leaders in English speaking Canada stand. You know, step forward, Justin Trudeau. What are the federal liberals going to say? Mm-hmm. Because whoever they are saying the wrong things about what is wrong in Quebec, but it's wrong politically in Quebec to oppose this language legislation. Language has always been at the core of fights between the federal government and the provincial government, whichever one it ever was in the province of Quebec. But this is tougher than ever before, I think. And so we need to know from these conservatives, where do you stand on Bill 96? And watch them twist and turn and try to find a way of talking their way out of it without telling us where they stand. And the same applies to Trudeau. They don't want to alienate Quebecers because you got to win a lot of seats in Quebec to form a national government in Canada.
Mm-hmm. That's the truth. Hey, Craig, we got to get out of here, but thank you for your perspective this morning. We always appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Dave. Good to talk to you on a very grim day.
On a very grim day, indeed. That's Craig Oliver, a veteran political correspondent. Coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Grace Schofield. She's going to be joining us for the What's Trending segment. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's look ahead to this afternoon when Kelly and Company hits the airwaves at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Ramya Amuthan is the co-host of that show. Hey, Ramya, we're a little tight for time this morning, so give me the number one item, the top tier list on the Kelly Co. agenda.
Okay, a local Edmonton startup has developed an app to help with navigating construction barriers, Dave. Everybody should be cheering right now. Jim Crisco is going to bring us up to speed on this initiative.
Ramya, we got so little of you this week because you're going to be away tomorrow and Friday because of the W. Ross McDonald special broadcasts for AMI
That's
Audio.
Right.
So thank you for hanging out for me, even if it's for just one sentence this week. It's always lovely.
We appreciate you, Dave. Thank you.
We appreciate you, too. That's Ramya Amuthan, the co-host of Kelly & Company, coming your way 2 p.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio. Sam Robinson is here with the Entertainment Report. Sam, forget basketball in Scarborough. There's a major hip-hop star making his way across the border.
That's right, Dave. So it was reported just a couple of days ago that J. Cole, from the United States, very famous rapper, very active in the aughts and the early teens of the new millennium.
Still one of the best rappers out there. He has done point finale.
Yeah, and he's done some really amazing work for other artists as well. Well, it turns out he's got a bit of a sports streak. So not only was he a high school basketball player, but he also is going to be signed a contract currently to play for the Scarborough Shooting Stars, a sort of elite basketball league in Canada.
Yeah.
And he had also been playing for a Rwanda-based Patriots basketball club in the Africa Basketball League. Like, really interesting and, like, diverse artist, but also one of the more rare crossover artists who really made his biggest impact in music first and then went over to sports. Oftentimes, and it's got me talking about other crossover artists, that it's like this one is so unique because of that, of which direction he's gone. Because it's so common to see an athlete who goes to acting or an athlete who goes to an actor who goes to music, something like that, but very rarely a music who goes to athlete.
Yeah, it's really a remarkable one. Yeah, you mentioned the opposite, like Jim Brown, the famous football player, became an actor.
Yeah,
right, and he became a pretty decent actor, yeah, all things being equal. And here's one on the opposite side. I wonder, of course, J. Cole is going to be playing in Scarborough, and there's going to be a lot of venues that he's playing across the country in the CBL. I wonder if there's going to be a lot of really neat, intimate shows that J. Cole is going to be doing as he's taking his talent on tour. I wonder if that musical itch is going to be scratching, and if we should be keeping our eyes open for small nightclub shows for J. Cole around the country.
Well, if he's smart, his manager is also going to be talking to the manager of the basketball club too, to see if they can get some synergy with
halftime entertainment.
Yeah, or at least some endorsements from his record label.
Or maybe he just wants to play basketball, which would also be super cool. Shouldn't pigeonhole the guy.
It seems like he's doing this out of love, and gosh, I can't fault him for any bit of that. And I also like it too that it's not just that, like, he's going from one genre to another genre, or like from one sport to another sport. He's really crossing over, and he seems to really love doing it.
Very cool, Sam. Thank you for this.
Cheers.
Let's bring in Grace Scofield to find out what's trending.
Hey, Dave. Thanks so much.
Grace, this one may actually relate a little bit to the idea of small concerts, or in this case, big concerts.
Oh, it definitely does. So hashtag Ticketmaster is trending today because Harry Styles has two shows coming up in August in Toronto at Scotiabank Arena on the 15th and 16th of his long-awaited Love on Tour concert. So I can talk about this because I'm first to admit I'm a massive Harry Styles fan. I had tickets to the 2019 Love on Tour concert, and then COVID, it got postponed, then it got canceled. So I have friends at the ready to buy tickets for these concerts today.
Okay, this is today.
It's today. This pre-sale starts in just over an hour.
Okay.
And fans are not super happy with Ticketmaster. So the way that they release these tickets is in stages of, like, verified fan pre-sales. So, for example, the verified fan pre-sale starts today, and the American Express Platinum pre-sale started yesterday.
Okay. So if you got the real fancy credit card, you're getting early access to some Harry Styles tickets.
Exactly. And so they release it in batches like that. Yesterday, ticket prices were anywhere up to, and they could use that super fancy credit card for them, because they were $1,750 to $2,000 for a platinum ticket.
Ooh.
To go to a don't get me wrong, I love Harry Styles, but that's not feasible
for pretty much
anybody.
That's
especially
rent.
That's a month's worth of rent, and his demographic is younger fans. So I don't know who can afford those, but they were being scooped up by scalpers and resold at that price as well, which is the other problem. But the thing is, with Ticketmaster, they do dynamic pricing for these pre-sales. So their original tickets were priced. They were set to be around $70 to $200. So there was a range of affordability there.
Yeah, it's a lot, but it's reasonable.
Yeah, right? Especially for such a big tour like Harry Styles. But these prices change due to market demand.
Mm-hmm.
So during a high period of activity on their website, like during a pre-sale, the algorithm raises the prices up. So then you end up with $1,750 tickets, apparently.
Oh, my gosh.
That makes sense. And so these are usually purchased quickly by people with the pre-sale codes, but those people might not be fans. They can be scalpers. They can be bots. They can just kind of be anybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
they're going to be resold for sometimes five times the amount of the original ticket, which is totally crazy. Now, fans aren't angry at Harry Styles. They're angry at Ticketmaster and their processes of not, you know, stopping these scalpers from doing anything. But, you know, as somebody who's a big fan of Harry Styles, I am ready to get my friends to buy me these tickets today. But I am going to have to set myself a budget, because there's no way that $1,750 is an appropriate price for a concert ticket.
Is there like a physical line, or is this only digital lines for the Harry Styles stuff?
It's only digital
only
on Ticketmaster.
You see, I miss the days of camping out to go get tickets. You see, that was old school, although I never was into enough popular music that was actually worth my time. Grace, we got to get out of here, but thank you for filling in for Nazreen/Sam today. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks so much, Dave.
That's Grace Scofield telling you what's trending. That's all the time we have on the show for today, but we'll be back again tomorrow when Shane Baker joins the show. We'll talk about the wellness benefits of spending some time outside in the great outdoors. and we'll talk tech with the gang from Double Tap. So fun show coming your way tomorrow morning. The show starts at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Until then, I'm Dave Brown reminding you to play safe, play fair, but don't forget to have some fun.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.